Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Arabelle Raphael, and you're listening to Why Are People Into That by Tina Horn.
Hey, Why Are People Into That fans? I want to start the show today on a personal note. I'm not a parent, but I do have more and more friends all the time who are becoming parents, and it's really making me realize just how little good information is out there about pleasure during conception and pregnancy and after childbirth and during early parenthood, the whole shebang. So I am very grateful that my friend Ryan, who has been a guest on the podcast a couple of times, is teaching a workshop called Oh Baby, Finding Your Rhythm Before and After Pregnancy. It's on May 12th at 2 p.m. at the Pleasure Chest on 2nd Avenue in New York City. I recommend it for anyone who wants to learn more about hormones, fertility, and postpartum pleasure. Find out more about this and all of the other amazing free workshops at the Pleasure Chest stores in New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles by visiting pleasurechest.com. All right, let's get this pod started, shall we? Hello, Yin Q and Poppy Lou.
Hi.
I'm so happy to have you here to talk about your new web series, Mercy Mistress. And so I am just going to turn over the mics to you first and foremost and have you tell us a little bit about both of yourselves and your work separately and then how you came together. And then tell us what Mercy Mistress is. But why don't you start with yourselves?
Okay. Hi, I'm Yin Q, and I have been a BDSM practitioner, aka professional dominatrix, for going on 20 years. Kink and especially sadomasochism and bondage has always been deeply rooted in my sexual proclivities. And I started exploring at a pretty young age, sometimes in unsafe ways. So finding the leather ways and learning about consent and safe words, and then also doing the training as a professional, really gave me the boundaries that I needed to practice it and explore it in a safe ways.
Can you speak to how you knew the difference between some of your early experimentation that you now can reflect on and see as less safe, mm-hmm, versus what you came to?
Sure. My first sadomasochism really started with cuttings. And that was a very solitary, it was very much wrestling with lots of emotions, but it was definitely about the pain and the love of the ritual of the pain.
So self-cutting.
Self-cutting. And it was something that was erotic. Mm-hmm. I very much would cut and then masturbate, mm-hmm, and use the blood as this sort of masturbation of my own emotions. And it was sort of like the cum shot, right, of my own emotions.
Yeah.
And to me, I would watch myself in the mirror while I was doing it. Mm. It was very sexual. And then, so that, while I would say it's not, it wasn't dangerous physically, it did come from a space of self-destructive as well. Mm. You know, so while it, so because it wasn't ritualized, or I hadn't really learned the ideas of ritualizing it in a way that was life-affirming, as opposed to sort of seeking a scream or, right, seeking the self-annihilation, mm, feeling. And then going into relationships where I just didn't know how to even kiss properly. or not, I wouldn't say properly. I just didn't know how to kiss softly and gently. It was always about just really grabbing the person, putting my hand around their throat, you know, biting, leaving as many bruises upon somebody's body as possible, and not necessarily with their consent.
Right.
You know, it was like a struggle. I mean, I confused a lot of people, you know.
And, oh my God, we have so much in common.
And then going from there into, you know, more sexuality of, right, still continuing that violent struggle of slapping, wanting to be slapped, trying to figure out who was going to slap who, and then sometimes, yeah, getting myself into some dark situations because I didn't set up a safe word.
Yeah,
I didn't think about negotiation.
Right, so you were like, you were craving that. And you were provoking it because you didn't know how to generate it for yourself yet.
Right. And even emotionally, too. I think I got into a lot of power play dynamics that were based on verbal humiliation. Mm. And I would get a thrill out of it. Mm. And be like, all right, let's fuck. You know?
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So BDSM gave you a path towards a different way of playing with all of those elements.
Yeah.
Cool.
Definitely. It was able to funnel all of that wildness and, yeah, give myself rules for sure.
And what was it like to do that as a job?
Well, because I do love to, or, you know, I love to have lots and lots of different partners. It satisfied that curiosity for me in terms of being just curious about humans, sexualities on so many different notes. But also as a professional, it gave me a sense of that I'm responsible for myself. Mm. To be professionally responsible for the person that you're playing with erotically, it really gave a whole different way of thinking about how I'm taking care of this person. How am I nurturing that person? Setting up scenes, choreographing experience. And then also, you know, as I learned through the professions and through these other amazing women who would give me these tips and guides about self-care and how do I keep myself safe as a top as well.
So where has your work led you in recent years?
Yeah, so I've been writing a lot more. Once I became a professional dominatrix, I was very much also plunged into the activism world of sex work activism. And now I'm making a show.
What's the name of that show?
Mercy Mistress.
Great, great name. Great name.
Thank you.
Well, so Poppy, tell us about you. All about you. Yeah, you can pass that off.
Hi, Tina.
Hi, Poppy.
Love you.
I love you too.
Hi.
I love this situation. My friend Alex Berg posted something similar on Instagram this morning and said, Chewbacca, but make it fashion.
That's kind of me. I also like only wear like tummy shirts. I feel like even if it's like the coldest day, I'm going to somehow figure out to like have my midriff show.
It just feels
the best.
That feels,
you know.
It feels very like, for me, I associate that with like Wet Seal circa 1993.
Ooh,
do you remember
Wet Seal? I resonate with that.
Yeah.
I do remember Wet Seal. I think I'm calling Wet Seal back.
Yeah.
Yeah. My like general aesthetic is like wearing like a tiny shirt or like just a bra as a shirt. But then like other things that are weather appropriate around it.
Layering.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm so, like, literally, if my midriff is not out, I'm like, what am I even doing? Like, am I even dressed for the public right now?
Your best.
I know. Is this even appropriate for me to go outside without my midriff out?
So what do you do besides layer?
And
show us your belly.
Other than rub my belly.
Wait, follow-up question. How do you feel about belly buttons?
I am into them. I'm into them. I like mine. I have like a...
That's great.
I have a really deep innie.
You do?
Yeah. It's like, it's deep.
Cool.
It's my pool of wisdom.
It sure is.
It's my power center. So.
It sure is.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Proceed. So besides all of that.
Besides
who are you?
Stuff. I am a queer first generation yellow American person from China, who is an actor and a poet. And I'm part of an organization called Collective Sex. And we have the mission of, our mission tagline is decolonizing queer and femme stories around sex, body, love, and healing. And that takes a lot of different forms. We do a lot of live events. We do a lot of community organizing. And we also create media as well. So yeah, that's kind of the nutshell of who I am. Like most recently, I've been doing a lot of stuff around abortion activism. Because a year and a half ago, actually a little less than a year and a half ago, because the day after the 2017 presidential inauguration, I premiered a short film that's based on my personal abortion story and then began touring it across the country. And most recently, I went on two tours through the Bible Belt on a Bible Belt abortion storytelling film tour.
Wow.
With my friend Amelia, who's the founding director of Shout Your Abortion, to like have conversations about abortion and for people to tell their own stories. I remember like when I had my experience, like, you know, I went into it as a very pro-choice person.
Yeah.
And I feel very like lucky and privileged that I live in New York, that I had access to abortion, that I could afford an abortion, that I was able to get an appointment like really soon and just take a subway over to get that. So I had like, you know, in some ways, like all of the resource support, and also felt like didn't feel shame or guilt around the decision itself. But I remember just going through that experience feeling like really, really lonely, which that was a really confusing experience of being like, whoa, like, why do I feel just like, you know, I had a partner then too that was like really present with me as well. And after meditating on that a little bit, and before I shared my story, I realized that, you know, for something like abortion, for instance, where the conversation is so political and everyone and like their second uncle has an opinion about it, the conversation like didn't actually leave any room for a nuanced, complex, like human journey of what it's like to like go through this very common human thing that happens.
And even the banality of it.
Yeah. Or just like, I had no reference point other than like political conversations for just like being a like flesh and bone spiritual human body going through this thing that like honestly has been happening since the beginning of time.
Absolutely.
And so that's been that tour. And I just got back a couple weeks ago from the second part two of it, where we went to North Carolina and DC and Alabama and Louisiana and Florida.
Oh my God.
And it was really, really cool. Like, we have conversations afterwards, and like there's a lot of folks that are there that are just like, whoa, like I want to share my story right now also, and I've never spoken this to anyone before. And like, you know, or I work in abortion and I've never been actually able to talk about this other than in a work related way.
Incredible.
So yeah, I feel like there's a lot of like storytelling as healing, storytelling as community building, that's really a huge part of Mercy Mistress as well.
Will you please tell us, both of you, all about Mercy Mistress? What do you want them to know?
Mercy Mistress is a fictional account, but it's based on my career and time as a professional dominatrix. As a queer Asian American professional dominatrix in New York City, it's basically my life story. But it's also about the people that I've met, you know, the clients that I've worked with, as well as people that I play with in my lifestyle. It goes very vertical in terms of each episode takes one client or submissive or other person besides the main character that's based on me, and explores their world, explores how they balance or don't balance BDSM and their interests within kink.
The first thing that came to mind for me was like, I just want people to know that like I love Yin so much. Like, that's honestly like, I feel like for me, part of like the heart center of it is like, I like just deep love for you. And I really do.
I love you too, Poppy.
I love you so much. And it's kind of a really special thing, like as an actor, to play someone who is someone that you love and care about, who is alive. I mean, like, honestly, people like are always trying to play other people that are like dead. It's like, no one's gonna tell you that's not what it was, like, you know. But like, here's a person who's like here, and we're like holding each other account, you know. Like, I'm holding your life in this story. And like, yes, like parts of it have been fictionalized, and like there just feels like there's a tremendous amount of like just care and tenderness and love that needs to go into that, and to like be just with each other, that whole process in this like reciprocal healing loop has been really, really, really special. And I have like a lot of respect for you and like your story and your journey and like the way that you do your work and the way that you talk about being a Dom and the love that you have for your clients. I remember when I was doing like character work for it, Yin connected me with a bunch of other pro-Dom friends, and some of them were generous enough to let me sit in on some of their client sessions with cool. consent from the clients as well, for me to just observe what the interactions were. And the main question I had that I was really wanting to see was like, what are the interactions with the clients before and after the session? That's what I was most curious about, you know, because once you're in a scene, you're in a scene. Mm. And in some way, as an actor, I'm like, I understand that very much. Like, you negotiate totally. What the scene is, you figure that out, and like, you do the scene. But I was like, what is it like beforehand? What is it like after? And like, I know every Dom has like a different relationship with clients, but the thing that really stuck out to me was I was like, there is so much love here. There's just like so much love, like, and there's so much care, and there's checking in with each other about like personal lives, growth and family and community and health and giggling. There's like so much laughter, you know? And I think part of like one of the myths that like we want to be busting is that like, you know, even the word like dungeon, it's like, you know, like some of it's very sacred and like that's so awesome. And also it's like, I don't know, I feel like there's like a pop culture myth of just like everything's like, because it's so underground, it's so like secret and dark. And what I was really excited about was being like, you know, there's a lot of love in this world. There's a lot of to negotiate and to communicate and to figure out consent and to figure out boundaries and to figure out body and to talk about healing. Like there has to be like deep love and trust. Mm. And to see that in action was so beautiful.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of happiness and fun and glee with all the sessions, but also outside of sessions. And oh, I love you too, Poppy. I've actually learned a lot from doing this project in terms of trust. I feel like Poppy is just giving me this entire world of collaborating, you know, in a different way that I've ever worked before. Because as a pro Dom, you are working with one singular person, and it is interactive, but you're pretty much, you know, the top usually leads the choreography of the scene. And then being the writer, you're, it's an isolating work of art, and sometimes can be very frustrating in how alone it is. But to be able to actually write, interact and create something that's collaborative on this level has just been this beautiful, I don't know, just beautiful like circle of trust.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, so the show is a web series. People will be able to watch it.
Well, we're going to be premiering it in New York City in May, followed by an L.A. premiere as well.
The public screenings for New York City will be from May 16th through the 23rd. And then Los Angeles, the public screening there will be May 23rd. And then it will actually be available on Vimeo for 2 weeks. And we are also going to be showing a Chicago screening as well on June 14th. And then we're hoping to, find a good home for it. Someone who, you know, someplace that will allow us full creative control and production as well as for storyline.
Right. So that's how TV showbiz is done these days. That's right. So you guys did a Chuffed campaign to raise the money, and you produced the pilot.
Yes.
And so that's the only thing that exists yet.
Yet.
But it the only thing. It was like a 5-day production here in Brooklyn, right?
It was 5-day production. It is now close to a 40-minute show.
Cool. If people are interested in either coming to the LA or New York or Chicago screenings in May, or watching it on Vimeo for free.
It'll be 2 weeks directly after May 23rd. We will be dropping it online.
Awesome. For free. So if people are interested in watching it, you know, what kind of show should they be in the mood for when they're watching it? Is it funny? Is it serious? Is it erotic? Is it explicit? Tell us more about just sort of like the genre of what kind of story you wanted to tell and what kind of mood and show and tone you wanted to make and how it ended up. Did that match your original vision, etc.? Lots of questions.
I'd say yes, all of the above.
Me too.
It's really funny, I think. You know, I wrote it out hoping that it would come through. And I've been, yeah, we get giggles. We get laughs during the table read. I was really happy to hear like everybody laughing at the areas that I'd hoped that they would. And it's erotic. It's definitely erotic.
It's sexual.
I have seen this sizzle reel.
It's sexual. That's for sure.
And there's many layers of different stories happening with, you know, with the main character and her family and the people that she surrounds herself with in and out of the SM world and SM studio. And
yeah, I mean, we've like said a lot how like one of the intentions for creating this is on one hand to tell a really like authentic version of like Yin's personal life story as a pro-dom, and also creating enough space for like folks who have no exposure at all to like BDSM or kink or even any idea of like anything around sex work to have a window and doorway into this world and conversation. It felt really precious, like important for us to protect the story in the creating of it, which is also why we kind of created it in this process of self-crowdfunding it and then creating it with our own creative teams. If it were to enter the industry immediately from like pitch idea, a ton of things would have happened to it. You know, it would have, I think, been really whitewashed. I think it would have been like, it would have been turned into like a 50 Shades of Grey situation, which is like the farthest thing from like actual BDSM. For this story, it's like as much about BDSM as it is about like this like immigrant Chinese person's life and like intergenerational healing and, you know, family and healing from trauma in childhood, and all of that is like intrinsic to the story. So yeah, there's a lot there, but it's definitely sexual.
Full disclosure, got to see the sizzle reel, and I related to a lot of things about it. Like, well, I related both to the client character who seems to maybe be the or one of the POV characters of the pilot, who is like watching shoes at the intersection. A literal intersection at, like on the street. And also just moments of both in session and before and after session. Yeah, there's like a moment of you gathering yourself, and I don't know where it is in the narrative, but sort of like sitting sort of like at a desk, like behind the scenes, like centering yourself or gathering yourself. Just like a glimmer of that I really related to. Also, the sound design is very erotic.
Yes, we have this amazing composer and musician, Melanie Chu, who has just composed this incredible score for the entire pilot. So, and then our sound designer, Brian Goodhart from Sonic Union, also, it's just layers in all the sensuality, audio sensuality that comes from all of erotica, using all of our senses to really tap in.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time that I watched something where I felt like the sound made me feel like I was in the same room as the material of latex or leather or shoes or a body or lipstick. Mm-hmm. It was really, or metal.
Yeah.
I liked that.
I feel like one of the most important things for submissives is the sound of the footsteps.
Oh, yeah.
So we were like, yeah, we've done so many footsteps. Like, we've done so much recording of walking down a hallway.
Fun.
For that.
Click clacks.
Because it is such an anticipatory moment. And that's how you know when your top is coming or leaving.
So I got to be an extra in a scene. And that was really fun. I've been on a few movie or video shoots in my time in various capacities. I love movies and theater, and I love the sort of like behind the scenes inside baseball part of it. So like being an extra is really fun because you're there and you have a purpose, but you're also just there to be like moved around and directed, and it's like kind of relaxing for like an alpha person. You know, it was an extraordinary set to come into, to be as an, even as an extra, to be greeted and appreciated by everyone involved, and for everyone from the stylist and the makeup and the costume folks to the PAs to the directorial team being, you know, a lot of women, a lot of queers, a lot of people of color, a lot of people who obviously are a part of the cultures that are being depicted, and engaging with one another in a way that made that I really felt it in my body, and it made me feel happy that my body was then in the show. So what, how did you do that?
More love, right? But really intentional hiring, and net, you know, from our communities. It was part of the first discussions between Poppy, Amanda, our director and executive producer, and myself about how we create this show and whom we hire and how we even engage with each other, in terms of this idea that, you know, so many workplaces are, there's this idea that there's some kind of hierarchy, that, you know, certain people aren't supposed to talk to the director or whatnot. And we really wanted to take that away and make it a community and make it, so we call it, you know, the Mercy Mistress team, the MM team. And, I don't know, Poppy, you can probably speak more eloquently on this.
Yeah. Amanda and I talk about this a lot. Amanda's like the other half of Collective Sex, and we talk about a lot how, on one hand, it's important what types of stories and media and content we are making, and on the other hand, it's really important the process through which we make it. And we believe very much that like what you end up seeing on screen is a representation of like all of the people that are behind it, who are creating it, and that the process really, really matters, and that part of like decolonizing our lives and like reclaiming our stories from like a very like cis white hetero patriarchal male like viewpoint is not only in like uplifting stories of like, you know, queer folks and our like, you know, queer femme POC communities, but also to like create a process that is like healing in and of itself. And we're like not perfect in it, and like we're experimenting with it, but like what we do have is that, like, you know, everything that we do is going to be rooted in like a ton of love. Like, we're figuring this out together, and also like actually if we're all showing up like caring about each other and like wanting to like uplift each other, like that's going to show, and that's going to like, you'll feel it even if like all of the kinks haven't been worked out exactly. And like that's a life journey to like, you know, to do that both in the media industry and like elsewhere as well. But we've had like folks on the set, which like, you know, people in the crew who, I remember someone said they subbed in actually only for one day because someone else couldn't do it the first day, and so they were only on set actually for one day. But we were talking at the cast and crew wrap party afterwards, and this person was like, you know, I was on like a 3 month long multi-million dollar shoot in the fall on that set every single day. And they were like, I didn't feel as appreciated on that as I did on this one day with you all here. And they're like, I don't know what that is, but like, I just feel like cared about. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's amazing. Like, that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, we got a lot of comments like that. There was an assistant to the art director who said, you know, wow, the director and the camera, you know, the director of photography, they both know my name and say hi to me. Like, that's amazing. And then we had a person of color who was one of the grips, who said, you know, it's amazing to actually see so much diversity on this side of the camera as well as in front of the camera. And, you know, that was great to hear. It was really uplifting to hear.
Amazing. I know that everyone listening now is just desperately, like, will perish if they don't get to see Mercy Mistress. So let's go over where they can find out more about both of your individual work, including Collective Sex, on the internets, and where they can make sure that they're getting all of the appropriate updates about what is going on with Mercy Mistress, slash also help support monetarily, and or if they know, you know, a really big studio that wants to, like, produce this and put it out there and also let you maintain all of this, like, culture that we are talking about. Like, if anybody listening wants to check it out or help or get involved, where can they find out about that on the internet?
Yeah, I'd say go directly first to the website, which is mercymistress.com. We also have a Facebook page. Please, please, please go onto the Facebook page and like us, unless you're, you know, unless you've divorced yourself from Facebook, which is completely reasonable.
In which case we support that also.
Absolutely. And as well as following us on Instagram, which is just at Mercy Mistress. Yeah, if we can bring up our followers and really show that we've got a fan base and that people really want us to tell these stories in the way that we are producing it, with mindful hiring and collaboration. And I also wanted to interject that we are also hiring from the sex work community, which is very important to me, either for people who are interested in just having something on their resume, to people who are truly interested in media and just really want to start, you know, their career, or if they've got a career in it already, want to continue it. Yeah. Right, absolutely, just to come and be part of it. So.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I think I have to second all of that. Like, because we're doing this in a really grassroots way, having a lot of community support, like, I mean, everything that's happened up until now would not have been possible without the community support. And that's kind of the way to move forward also. And I think what's really exciting, and I think this is, like, one of, like, only in this time right now, in, like, 2018, is this, like, really possible that, like, grassroots projects like this are able to happen. And I think, like, big networks, etc., are listening to that, because, like, they're I think understanding that, like, what they're making, their, like, formulaic media creation is becoming so irrelevant, and people, and it's harmful and it's violent, because you know, we're like it's so much erasure of so many other people. And so I think there's a lot of attention within big networks to be like, okay, where are, like, the people making their own work that we are trying to support. And so something like this is, like, I think it's just really interestingly placed time-wise, but showing support on social media is really great. Mercy Mistress on Instagram is at Mercy Mistress, facebook.com/Mercy Mistress. Yeah. And then Collective Sex hosts a bunch of live events in New York. We do a collaboration with a really amazing organization called Brooklyn Boyhood, like, every other full moon, which is, like, a queer POC full moon storytelling event, which is, like, always, like, the squishiest thing ever. So the next one is happening April 29th, I believe, which is a Sunday at New Women's Space, which is another amazing community organization. And, like, I just love plugging all my friends, because, like, honestly, like, what is the point of us making, like, dope shit if we can't, like, uplift everyone around us? Absolutely. As well in the process. So, like, come through, check out New Women's Space, check out Brooklyn Boyhood, come to, like, live storytelling queer full moon events. Mm-hmm. And then Collective Sex on Instagram is at Collective Sex, and then Facebook / Collective Sex as well. My personal page on Instagram is at Poppy Republic, and I write poems sometimes and share my own squishy feelings there.
Your Instagram posts are, like, are so poetic. I mean, they're definitely, I don't know, sparkly. I love them. And you can also follow the workshops of BDSM. I teach rope bondage classes, but also writing, and I host other types of events throughout the city that are focusing on how to uplift BDSM culture and spirituality and consent culture. And you can follow me at my website, which is yinq.net. And I'm also on Instagram at yinq13.
And one other thing that's happening soon, too, I think the weekend of April 22nd is the Women of Color Solidarity Conference, which is co-founded by two amazing friends of mine, Florcy and Cheyenne. And Yen and I are going to be doing a BDSM for Femmes of Color rope bondage workshop there. So come through to that and check out the conference. It's really, really amazing.
With a concentration on healing. Right. So that's the subject is
ritual work and healing.
Right. How to use rope bondage to heal and also talk about consent. Yeah.
I'm so glad to have you both on my couch talking about this. And I can't wait to watch what you've already made and everything else that you do make. I am excited about full moon storytelling. I'm just really, I'm like stoked on all of this, especially since we're coming out of a maddeningly long winter, and I'm feeling ready to like spread my pollen around and fucking suck up other people's pollen too, so can, like,
let's cross-pollinate.
That's what that's called. Cross-pollinate. Thank you both so much for the work that you do and for talking to me about it.
Oh, thank you, Tina, for the work that you do.
Thank
we
you,
love
Tina.
You.
Honestly, you're amazing. And it is such an honor and joy to be in community with you. And also to all of Tina's listeners as well. Keep supporting Tina because Tina is the shit.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. You're like really preaching to the choir.
Hey.
Should we start karaoke?
Hey.
Oh my God, next time. Okay, thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.